Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. I'm here with an amazing author that has a very relevant title today. A lot of things that are going on in the news that, could not have been anticipated, I think, when going into the promotion and definitely the writing of this book, but seems oddly relevant to what's going on right now. The book is called Poisoned, the True Story of the Deadly E. Coli Outbreak that Changed the Way Americans Eat. The author is Jeff Benedict. You probably have heard or read some of his previous books, Little Pink House, Without Reservations, Pros and Cons, Out of Bounds, and the one I remember distinctly, The Mormon Way of Doing Business. He's been on, he's really been everywhere from 60 Minutes, 2020, Dateline, and he's also a sports nut. With him, we have Kimberly Kauser from February Partners, which is a boutique marketing firm in New York. How are you guys doing this morning?
Terrific.
Great.
So maybe the first thing we should discuss before going into a background on the book, which obviously doesn't directly connect to what's going on in Germany, but Jeff, maybe you could give us a little background from your expertise on what's going on over there.
Well, I think there's a really interesting parallel between what's happening in Germany and in all over Europe and what happened in the United States in the early 90s. Germany has obviously been blindsided by this E. coli outbreak. They were totally unprepared for it. There's nearly 3,000 people sick now, 26 people dead, and about almost 800 people with hemolytic uremic syndrome, which is a lethal complication that some people get once they get E. coli. And, you know, it's not a whole lot different than what happened in the States when the Jack in the Box outbreak happened in the early 90s. Americans were totally unfamiliar with E. coli. The government and food safety inspectors and certainly Jack in the Box were blindsided by that outbreak. And that outbreak was so big here that it led to a lot of the food safety reforms that we have in place today. And we haven't had an outbreak of that scope since then.
And, I was reading yesterday about, was it lung failure that a lot of people are coming down with, which...
Yeah, when this complicating factor called hemolytic uremic syndrome, in the Jack in the Box outbreak, there were about 750 people who got sick, and about 50 of them got HUS. And when you get HUS... what happens is your vital organs get attacked, and things like heart attacks and lung failure and brain damage are the results. And it's kind of amazing to think about eating something and then ending up with a heart attack, and especially if you're a child. And that's basically what happened in Jack in the Box, and you're seeing it now, but just at a grander scale in Europe.
Now, Jeff, what is the difference between the strain from the 90s, the Jack in the Box E. coli strain, and then the strain now that they're finding in Europe? It's different, right?
Yeah. Basically, back in the early 90s, the strain that came to light through Jack in the Box is 0157H7. And that's the strain that was declared an adulterant by the United States federal government after the Jack in the Box outbreak. So today in America, for example, all public health facilities, hospitals, doctor's offices, they test for 0157H7 when they take a stool culture. If someone comes in and has bloody diarrhea or the other symptoms of E. coli poisoning. But that's the only strain of E. coli that we test for right now in the U.S. And it's the only one we inspect for when we inspect food. But since 93, there have been six other strains, and we refer to them in the U.S. as the Big Six. And they have different numbers than 0157H7. And the strain that's afoot in Europe is 0104H4. and it's similar, but it's not the same. And it's a mutation, basically, of these other strains. And I think it's a big wake-up call for the United States to say, listen, we've known about these six other strains. They are in our food supply. We've had some small outbreaks, not well-publicized, with these additional strains. We could have another outbreak like Jack in the Box or like what's happening in Europe if we don't get ahead of it and start testing for these other strains in our food.
Yeah. I was reading Mark Bittman's blog yesterday, and he mentions poison, and he also talks about Bill Marler and, you know, notes that he's really the guy that we have to thank for the current level of protection against E. coli that we have in the U.S. But what you're saying is really we're only protected against one strain, and I'm just curious to know kind of what Bill and some of the other food safety advocates are doing and how, you know, you think this outbreak is going to change things on a national level.
Well, actually, I was really glad that Mark Bittman wrote about Bill and mentioned poison in his piece yesterday, because he did, I think, a similar thing that he was drawn to what I was drawn to when I started writing Poison, which was I noticed that Bill Marler was a lawyer that really knew nothing about food poisoning prior to 93, and he gets a call from a client whose child is sick with E. coli. And at the time, you know, Bill was just 3 years out of law school and was a fledgling attorney. He took that case, and, you know, before it's over, he represents hundreds of kids in Jack in the Box, and he wins a historic legal settlement. And that's what really launched him to become the number one food safety advocate probably in the world today. And that's why I chose to make him the main character of the story, because he really is a guy who just does really unusual things, and he has a different approach. But I've been talking to Bill a lot this week, and one of the things that Bill's been ahead of the curve on is he started lobbying the FDA and the USDA to start testing for these other strains of E. coli 2 years ago. And he's the one who started doing independent testing, which he funded privately, where he started sending researchers out to buy random samples of meat and chicken in grocery stores around the country. And then they had them tested at a lab in Seattle, and sure enough, they found a significant percentage of them that had these pathogens in them. And so he's, you know, as we speak, he's pushing very hard in Washington to try to get these things tested and funded.
That's great. Maybe you could also tell us a little bit about how you met Bill and kind of came to the story, the Jack in the Box story, to begin with. I feel like your personal story is very interesting and kind of is married to the whole topic.
Yeah, it is interesting because I didn't want to write a book about food. My wife had been encouraging me to do it for years as an investigative story, an expose, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. And then we converted our own property to an organic farm and changed the way we eat, and that really got me thinking more about food and mostly food safety. And I started looking into outbreaks, and eventually I called Bill Marler. I didn't even know anything about him other than the fact that he represented a family whose kid got really sick with food poisoning, and I wanted to interview the family, so I called the lawyer. And in the course of our conversation, I said, by the way, how did you get into foodborne illness litigation? That's kind of a strange area of law. And he said, you're familiar with Jack in the Box? And I said, of course. And then we started talking about it, and I quickly realized this guy had a really interesting story. So I flew out to Seattle to meet him 2 years ago and interview him, and just to kind of see if he had what it would take to build a story around. And I showed up at his house. When he picked me up at the ferry dock in Seattle, his car license plate said E. coli on it. And I knew right then that this guy is, he was a character. And we went to his house, and I started taping an interview with him at about 9 o'clock in the morning. And 10 hours later, we were still sitting at the table taping. And we had barely talked about Jack in the Box. And I just found his story of how he got to Jack in the Box so compelling. And it had a lot to do with the way he handled the Jack in the Box case that I decided to build the whole narrative for Poison around the lawyer who sued Jack in the Box. And then, of course, I brought in the families that he represented, and I brought in the folks from Jack in the Box, was fortunate to be able to get their CEO and their food safety expert to cooperate for the book. And I think having Jack in the Box's input so that readers could sort of see what it's like to be in the room at Jack in the Box when they get the call from the state health department saying, your meat is sickening hundreds of kids in Seattle, it's a pretty dramatic moment. And I wanted readers to be able to get the story from both sides.
Yeah, of course. So one of the other things, you know, you were just talking about Bill doing a lot of testing, too, on his own and independent tests, and that the government only really tests for one strain here. And is the, you know, do you feel like the problem is really just industrial farming, or, you know, is it something that we also need to be aware of with smaller local organic farms? I mean, how do we really know as consumers where to shop and if we're safe?
Well, that's a great question. And I mean, I think it's important for people not to get paranoid about food. But on the other hand, the problem up to now has been that we've been way too cavalier about food. And neither of those extremes is good. I would start with the fact that, yes, industrial farming is, if you even want to call it farming, I call it factory farming, but these massive CAFOs where there's thousands of cows and chickens and stuff like that that produce the majority of the meat sold in our stores, that kind of food production is not healthy, and it's responsible for the big outbreaks. You know, most of the big foodborne illness outbreaks come from that kind of factory farming or industrial food production. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that if you go strictly organic, you never have to think about food safety. Not true. We've had outbreaks from food that's grown on organic farms. So I think there's some simple rules of thumb, and they really are simple, is that number one, it's good to grow your own garden. That's not going to supply all your food needs, but it'll supply some, and it's a good thing. Most Americans used to have a garden. Today, very few do. But grow some of your own produce. Number two, you know, for buying, it's always good to try to buy local. And today, there are more and more farmers markets and local farms that make their food available to consumers. The old excuse, well, we can't get that, is not as relevant today. Number three, you know, there are grocery stores now, more and more, even Walmart, that are carrying products that are organic or that are locally produced. I was in a Whole Foods 2 days ago in Washington, D.C., and I was buying produce and produce products that were grown, you know, locally in that region. And when you buy and shop and consume that way, you just dramatically cut down your risks. And the other thing to think about is if you buy food at a farmer's market, let's say, and let's say you're the unfortunate one who gets a contaminated food product at a farmer's market. The reality is, if that's where you buy it, that is not going to turn into a big outbreak with hundreds of people poisoned, because it's sold at a little stand and a few people buy it, and that's how you know the difference here, because these big outbreaks are happening from products that are mass-produced and shipped around in lots of places, and people consume them all over the place. So grow your own, buy local. And when you shop in grocery stores, you know, try to buy food that's in season and that doesn't come from too far away, and you're just going to cut down. Now, the food you do buy, people say, well, what about produce? Is it safe to eat raw? It is safe to eat raw. You should just wash your produce. You don't need to wash it in bleach. You just wash it in water. It's always wise to remove the outer leaves. If it's lettuce, if it's an onion, you know, the outer leaves are what, if there is a pathogen exposure, that's typically where the exposure occurs. And so there are simple things you can do that are kind of common sense. Remove the outer layers and discard them. Wash your produce before you eat it. Things like that.
That's interesting. And you didn't really mention this when you're just kind of saying what we can do, but what about restaurants? And when you're going out to eat somewhere, you know, what kind of things, even if it's say it's a local organic restaurant that they source the food locally. I mean, are there things that we should be paying attention to or asking?
Well, that's a good question. And what I do and I encourage people to do is there's really two ways to look at it. Number one, it's the restaurants you go to because they're where you live. So when you're home and you go out to eat, where do you go? And most people have, like, their favorite places that they go to most often. And so what I do is those restaurants for me and for my wife or my family are, we have three or four of them in our community that we go to, and we know the chefs and we know the restaurants really well. And we also know where they source their foods, and they buy their foods, most of their produce and vegetables and even their meats and poultry, they buy from local farmers or from the same farmers market that I shop at. And so, for starters, I know where they're getting their food from, and I know they're healthy sources. And that's a great thing. Now, if you're going to a restaurant that you're not familiar with because you're traveling or you're with friends or whatever, you know, I think it really pays to ask questions when you go to the restaurant. And today, more and more restaurants who are conscious of food quality and food safety, they will tell you things on the menu, like on the chicken, they're going to tell you, you know, it's a free-range chicken, organically raised, you know, fed a natural diet and comes from XYZ farm. But if you don't have that information disclosed on the menu, I would ask questions. And most people are afraid to do that. But when it comes to food, you know, if you go buy a new car, you're not afraid to ask tough questions of the salesman. Well, you ought to be doing that with food because you're putting it in your body. And I think it's perfectly appropriate to ask the waiter, you know, where do you get your meat from? Where does your beef come from? You know, and if they don't know where it came from, I mean, I'd have serious second thoughts about ordering it. You know, I'd get something else. And it also doesn't hurt when you order a salad to say, you know, just curious, is your lettuce bag lettuce or is it head lettuce? You know, are these leafy greens fresh or did they come in a bag? Because if they came in a bag, you know, I don't really want to eat them. Because there have been too many problems with bagged leafy greens. And so I think that those are things that consumers can do when they're out and about eating, is just ask some questions.
Yeah, those are really great suggestions, Jeff. And I think that's something that, you know, you said we really don't think about, and we should on a daily basis of where our food's coming from, where we're getting it.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, Kimberly, the fact is, the reason that the book Poisoned has the subtitle, The True Story of the Deadly E. Coli Outbreak That Changed the Way Americans Eat, is because prior to Jack in the Box, nobody really ever thought about the idea that eating a hamburger could actually be lethal. I mean, that concept was so mind-blowing to people, including me, when that happened. But as a result of that case, because it was such a big case, I think it was the precursor to the organic movement and many, many books that raised our awareness about food and where it comes from. And today I think consumers are asking tougher questions. We want healthy food, and we want safe food and healthy food. And there are things being done to food today to make it sterile so it's safe that isn't healthy. And so, how do you get E. coli out of ground beef? Well, one way is to raise the beef differently and also more healthy way. But the easy way to do it is to inject the beef with ammonia. And there's a lot of mass-produced ground beef today that has ammonia in it. Well, ammonia kills E. coli, so they'll say, well, that's a good thing. But I would ask, is that really a healthy thing? You know, I don't really want to eat that either. And so that's why I say that I think it really pays to be asking, where'd you get your meat from, you know, stuff like that. And farmers who are doing it right, and restaurants who are doing it right, and stores that are doing it right, A, they'll know the answer, and B, they'll be proud to tell you.
Good. One of the other things I was just thinking of was, you know, what do you think that we can do, or what do you think the government's going to do in the U.S. as a result of this? Do you really see any major changes? Are they going to start testing for these other six strains that you said that they don't currently test for? I mean, what do you see is happening in the coming months?
Well, you know, as a little heads up, it's kind of interesting the timing of our call today, but tomorrow, every member of Congress and the President of the United States, the First Lady, the head of the USDA, the FDA, and the Department of Agriculture are all going to receive a hand-delivered copy of Poisoned. That's about 600 people who are the lawmakers and policy setters for food safety. And there's going to be, I think, a tremendous effort over the next 2 weeks to get the Congress to vote to fund the Food Modernization Act, which will dramatically increase the number of inspections and the number of inspectors. And there will also be a great effort to get the Obama administration, particularly his Office of Budget Management, which has been a big thorn in the side of fixing this problem, to realize that what happened in Europe could definitely happen in the United States if we don't get ahead of these bugs. We can't just be reactive all the time, you know, and have a congressional hearing and point the finger at some food grower or some food company and say, shame on you. If we know about these pathogens and we haven't done something to prevent them, then it's shame on us. And so I think in the next, I'd say 3 months, you're going to see a lot of activity on the food safety front.
That's great. So what else are you doing, Jeff? Maybe you could tell us some of the other things besides, spreading the word about the story and the Jack in the Box outbreak.
Yeah.
I mean, what are some of the things you're doing as to kind of help move things forward?
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, I think of myself first and foremost as a writer and a storyteller, not an activist.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working on Poisoned, I certainly read Michael Pollan and Eric Schlosser, who have written books exclusively about food, and they've done it repeatedly, and they do it very well. And I thought, that's good that they do that, but that's not really what I do. But ironically, now that I have written a book where the backstory is definitely all about food, I find myself becoming more and more of a spokesman and an advocate for food policies that I believe in and that I think are healthy and safe. And inevitably, people who read Poisoned are constantly calling, writing, emailing, showing up at events that I'm doing, and they have very simple questions like, is it still safe to eat fresh fruit and vegetables? Should we be eating hamburgers? Do you avoid fast food? Food is on people's mind. It is a big, big point of concern and all over the world, but certainly in the United States. And right now, I think our radar is acutely tuned to this. So I'm taking advantage of the heightened awareness right now, and I'm just doing a lot of public speaking, an awful lot of radio and television interviews, which to me, that's sort of a public awareness campaign that I want to be part of, along with many other people who are concerned about this. And one thing that's been kind of nice is a lot of the people who are in Poisoned as characters, like Bill Marler or Dave Fino, the food safety specialist from Jack in the Box, they are now the industry experts in the world on this stuff, and I've had the opportunity in the last 3 weeks to do a lot of programs with them. I did an NPR show with Dave Fino 2 days ago, and it was all about food safety, and callers from around the country were calling in with very basic questions like, how do you wash your vegetables? So it's a great opportunity for public education.
That's wonderful. I think we just have a few minutes left going forward. Tyson, did you have any last-minute things you wanted to ask Bill? Jeff, I'm sorry.
I'm curious as to what you mentioned, distributing copies to folks in charge and making decisions related to these topics. But what other kind of outreach are you guys doing?
Well, that's a good question. We have actually, in the last 3 weeks, Bill Marler has personally donated over 2,500 books to law schools, business schools, and undergraduate programs that have pre-law or pre-med majors. And it's a widespread distribution effort. We picked about a dozen schools, some law schools, some not. But we're trying to get the book in the hands of future leaders, future attorneys, future policymakers, you know, the students whose minds are really open to this stuff. And we've had tremendous reception from deans and presidents of colleges and law schools who are now setting up food policy courses. Northeastern University in Boston, for example, this fall will introduce two new courses on food that will be part of their undergraduate program. And our book will be the textbook. And so, you know, 350 students are going to read Poisoned in the fall as part of an undergraduate course. And I think those kinds of things are just sort of, they're cutting edge, they're really different, but it's a way to have a long-lasting impact with a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. If there are some fundamentals that people can walk away from reading this book, or until they pick up a copy, would you say that is, it deals with regulation and it deals with buying locally and being educated about where your food comes from?
Well, you know, Tyson, what I would say is that this book is, you know, this book is written like a novel, except it's not a novel, it's nonfiction. And I'm using families and the attorneys in the restaurant that were in this outbreak to tell a story through them. I really wrote this book for parents who have kids that they buy food for and feed every day, people like me. And so I think the takeaway message is, when you read this, you can see how literally a few degrees of cooking can be the difference between life and death sometimes. And what it does is it just points up the need to be much more thoughtful about what you're putting on your child's fork when you sit down for dinner every night, and that it really does matter to know, where did this food come from, and how did it get to my house and on my child's plate? Because in 93, nobody was thinking about that. And when kids started dying, suddenly a lot of people started thinking about that. But it's easy to get off that and move on to other things. And I think with food, you can't really afford to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, frightening stuff in a lot of ways, but it sounds like, you know, there are hopeful things to hang on to. Thank you so much, both of you. The book is Poisoned, The True Story of the Deadly E. Coli Outbreak That Changed the Way Americans Eat. You can buy the book online, your local independent bookstore, your Barnes & Noble, the Borders locations that still exist. And the author is Jeff Benedict. Thank you so much, Jeff. And also thank you, Kimberly. Her firm is February Partners. You can check out what they do at februarypartners.com. Very exciting stuff. So thank you so much, and we'll talk to you guys soon. And you know, hopefully the stuff in Germany will resolve itself nicely, safely.
Thank you, Tyson.
Hopefully, take care.
Thanks, Tyson. Thanks, Jeff.
I went there the depot with the General Workers Union. And yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working.